Welcome to If You Love This Planet. I'm Dr. Helen Caldicott, and in this program we talk about the greatest medical and environmental threats to all life, such as nuclear weapons and nuclear power, global warming, ozone depletion, toxic pollution, deforestation, and many other social and political issues that relate to global well-being. So if you love this planet, keep listening.
Hello and welcome to the show. Last week on If You Love This Planet, you heard part of a speech by Helen Caldicott in Brattleboro, Vermont, where the community are fighting to close down the Vermont Yankee nuclear reactor. This week, we'll play the whole speech, which was part of Dr. Caldicott's lecture tour to the United States in April 2009.
It seems appropriate I'm here in Brattleboro, which is just next to Massachusetts, where I used to live for about 18 years. We've just been down to look at the plant. It is... It's like going to Savannah River. I feel like I'm descending into Hades. I couldn't believe how many farms there were around, and cows and silage and sheep and children, and God almighty, there's a primary school right next to it. Paid for, I hear, by Entergy. That's absolutely wicked. And I am only here for one reason, in Brattleboro. That plant gets closed down next year, period. It gets closed down. Now, when I went to the State House yesterday, they're all talking about money. Decommissioning money and this money and that money. This has nothing to do with money. When you go to the doctor, well, your healthcare system's not very good, is it? They talk to you about money. Healthcare has nothing to do with money. Medicine has, when I first graduated and did my first locum, they paid me. I didn't ever realise I'd be paid for practising medicine. It was such a privilege to practise medicine on patients. I was embarrassed. Then I found out some of my colleagues had done medicine to get rich, and some of them did. But this is about health. This is about preventive medicine and public health. Period. Don't ever let anyone sidetrack you into money or legal systems, because they'll tie you up with court cases and stuff till the cows come home, and there are lots of cows here. Yeah, this is all about preventive medicine. Now, how do we teach people to stop smoking? We taught the kids in schools about smoking and cancer. Kids went home to their parents and said, "Mum, you've got to stop smoking." And now most people don't smoke, although the incidence of lung cancer in women now is higher than breast cancer, because it takes up to 20 years to develop the lung cancer, and they're getting lung cancer. And that's it, curtains, once you get lung cancer. But smoking only kills the smoker. Well, some passive smoking might be dangerous for babies and the like. But this plant is going to kill hundreds of thousands of people or more over time for all future generations. This plant is a cancer factory. That's all it is. It's a cancer factory. Its byproduct is, you know, a little bit of electricity so you can turn your computers on and stuff. It boils water. It's what it was designed to do. All it does is boil water. My God, there are other ways to boil water rather than fissioning the atom. The uranium that's put in, now I can talk about a 1,000 megawatt reactor because that's what I've learnt. Yours is 650, but let's extrapolate. The uranium becomes 1 billion times more radioactive when it's put in that damn reactor. 1 billion times. There's as much radiation, long-lived radiation, in a 1,000-megawatt reactor as that produced by 1,000 Hiroshima-sized bombs. These are deadly, deadly instruments. And they were made initially in the Manhattan Project to make nuclear weapons. This is a bomb factory. It was designed initially, nuclear reactors, to make plutonium. That thing will, a 1,000-megawatt reactor makes 500 pounds of plutonium a year, and all you need is 10 pounds to make a bomb. Well, they're selling them all over the place. I mean, they're selling them to Saudi Arabia and Lebanon, and Libya will build one, and Iraq's building one, and, you know, well, it's a good thing to sell reactors, isn't it? We're selling bomb factories. Nuclear power is about two things. It's about cancer, and it's about nuclear weapons, and its byproduct is electricity. And there's only 20 years supply of high-grade uranium in the whole world. How do I know? I come from Australia. The Australian continent is so ancient, all the mountains have washed away. And you know, when we first went there, well, when we invaded and stole it from the Aboriginal people, you'd walk along creek beds and just kick gold nuggets. There are huge mountains of iron ore, tin, silver, copper, and we've got 40% of the world's richest uranium, and by God, is our government wanting to dig the blasted stuff up. They are immoral. Well, we're not having nuclear power in Australia because it's too dangerous for us. We're just selling uranium so everyone else can get the cancers. That is so immoral, it's beyond my imagination. And when people say I'm emotional, or when the nuclear industry says I don't know what I'm talking about, and I was on some radio program this morning, Mark someone, who was it?
Mark Johnson.
Yeah. This man rang in, he said, where did you get your medical degree? And where else did you get one? And I said, you know, I was at Harvard on the faculty. And he said, have you ever done engineering, a course in engineering? How dare you talk about nuclear power? You don't understand engineering. I've built 3 nuclear power plants. And I said, have you done any medicine? Do you know about biology? Well, he was very rude and he kept talking and interrupting. And I said, do not interrupt me. And finally, Mark cut him off. Very rude man. And then I got another rude man on the line. An engineer, you know. I think some men, none of the men in this room, but some men, their reptilian brain has a toxic reaction to testosterone and they use their left brain to rationalise what their reptilian brain wants them to do. Whereas women, and we're real wimps, we're 53% of the population, we allow these men, many of who have Asperger's syndrome, but they're very clever. They're very clever. We allow them to do their evil. And we're pathetic. And we're 53% of the population. So it's time we stepped up to the plate and we took over. I don't mean taking men out of the equation at all. I mean working with them. The two important hormones to which we react and affect our behaviour are one, testosterone, and we know what testosterone does, and the other one in women is not so much estrogen, progesterone, it's oxytocin, which is secreted when you're in labour. But when there's an altercation and a fight, women tend to secrete oxytocin and they tend to want to make everything okay, and they make coffee and clean the benches and discuss things, and that's what we do. So oxytocin is medically indicated for the public health of the people of the planet. And we can have a bit of testosterone too on the side. No? I'm only joking, but I want to write a book called Why Men Kill and Why Women Let Them. So, I don't know why you live here. I wouldn't live here for all the tea in China. I'm serious. If that thing blows, you're dead. No, darling, that's a rationalisation. I'm sure it's a great town. Vermont's a wonderful state. If that thing blows, probably the whole of Vermont will be uninhabitable forevermore. Evermore.
So we've got to shut it down.
Yeah, how are you going to do it?
We're trying.
No, you're not trying, you're going to do it. Like, I've got you in the intensive care unit and you've got septicemia, I'm going to fix you. You know, one of my patients is the longest heart-lung transplant patient in the world, and he had cystic fibrosis. And he was navy blue, like my jacket, when he was 21. He had a heart-lung transplant. And he woke up from the operation and his fingernails were pink for the first time in his life. He's now 45. He got married. So if you're determined, you know, Ray Kroc, who founded McDonald's hamburger, said persistence always pays, but you haven't got time. And those silly legislators, I mean, it was really a strange feeling to be in the State House. Everyone's doing deals. And they're all walking around in pinstripe suits, very important, with their briefcases. And you know what's going on. And it happens in Congress too. But all the town meetings voted against Vermont Yankee. You've got to get the Massachusetts governor organized. And Randy Keeler, I don't know where you are, Randy. Randy ran the nuclear weapons freeze in the whole of America. Randy Forsberg wrote it, the two Randys. And this Randy ran it. So I pay obeisance to you, Randy Keeler. And he just talked to the governor of Massachusetts and said, Massachusetts got it. So it's just across the border. You go down and organise the whole of Massachusetts and all their town meetings. This means stopping what you do in your normal life. It means devoting your whole life until the legislature votes for it. Are there any doctors in the audience? Thank you. What sort of doctor are you?
A cardiologist.
A cardiologist? And?
Pediatrician.
Right. Have you got a white coat?
Yeah.
You've got a stethoscope? Got one of those mirrors with a hole in it? I'm joking. Okay, you now have the specialists here, and I'll walk you through the medical effects of that plant. So you go and make appointments with every single legislator, what are the 176, and take the doctor with you. And sit the man down, don't let him talk for half an hour. It's not yes but, yes but, yes but, cocktail party chatter, which happens when you get a tumour in a certain area of the brain. You just keep them quiet and teach, because this is a medical issue, like we do with our patients. It's pretty easy, and we scare the bejesus out of them. That's what we do with our patients. Well, not always, but sometimes patients need to be afraid to make them take their drugs at the right time, and so they get better. I got afraid. I've got a huge grade 5 specific something aortic plaque in the arch opposite my left carotid. That scared the bejesus out of me. I stopped eating cream and cheese and all of that stuff, and I'm on anti-cholesterol stuff and a whole lot of drugs. Well, I like living and I love food, but I got a hell of a fright because I could have turned into a vegetable and had a huge stroke. So I went to see my son in Massachusetts and he said, Mum, why is it hard to bake a vegetable? And I just said, I don't know, Will. He said, because it's hard to get their wheelchair in the oven. Okay. I usually go through uranium mining and I'm a bit bored with that. But suffice it to say, to power nuclear power plants, you have to dig up millions of tons of uranium ore and then you have to crush it and then you take it along to an enrichment plant in Paducah, Kentucky. Our uranium is enriched here. Suffice it to say, that whole process requires huge amounts of fossil fuel. And you know what the nuclear industry says? They're emission-free. Carbon-free. Now, I don't believe that any industry that produces carcinogens or toxins should be allowed to lie on the public media. NPR, National Petroleum Radio, should not be publishing or allowing the nuclear energy industry to put their ads on, which are overt lies. If we lie to patients or we lie to each other in the medical profession, we get struck off the register. You can't lie in science. You can't lie in the literature. And they're lying about the most important things in the world. What, don't you have a law against lying in advertising? Do you?
No.
Well, you've got to get one. Do you?
Yes.
So what's the department that runs it? The FCC? You've got a good Attorney General now. Hold it.
In the state.
Oh, he's a good one. He stopped them advertising for car. No, I'm talking about nationally. Yeah, you've got to stop those ads running. They're in the New Yorker. They're in the Scientific American. Children jumping into water, playing with their computers, you know. They have to have electricity. Well, look how we use electricity these days. You don't even have switches on the wall to turn off your electricity. You have to walk around at night and pull out every single plug. Dishwasher, never use a clothes dryer again. They're made by GE that makes good things for life, like clothes dryers, nuclear power plants and nuclear bombs. Well, how do you dry your clothes? Well, you hang them up on the clothes horse beside the furnace in the winter and they'll dry in a couple of hours and that'll give you a bit more humidity to your house. And in the summer, you hang them outside in the sun. We never use clothes dryers in Australia. We use clotheslines. Never use it again. You can save up to, 10% of the energy that's used in America, electricity, by not using clothes dryers. Americans can save 28% of the electricity they currently waste by conservation, and nuclear power only produces 20% of the electricity. Never leave all your computers and your DVDs and your dishwashers and everything. Pull them all out at night, out of the wall, because those sort of sleeping electronic things use 6% of the electricity that's used in America. In the high-rise buildings, they all should turn their lights off at night. You know, we don't need all these stupid lights. We don't need... Well, anyway, I know I'm preaching to the converted, so I'll shut up. You know all that. Okay, so all radiation is cumulative. Each dose you get adds to your risk of getting cancer. Never have... Hands up those who have your teeth x-rayed every year. Well, you don't need them x-rayed every year. My ex-husband was a radiologist. They make a lot of money. You need an x-ray of your tooth if you've got an apical abscess or something severe. Never get your teeth x-rayed. Always ask why you're having an x-ray. And be tough with doctors. It's right that you question them. Otherwise, we hide behind our specific language. So be careful with doctors. We're good people, but just know what's happening with your body. So x-rays. Now, when the technician says, breathe in, hold it, and runs out of the room, shuts the door and clicks, that's the moment you get irradiated. You don't become radioactive, but in that moment, your genes can be mutated and changed. Gamma radiation is the radiation like x-rays that are given off from radioactive materials in Vermont Yankee. Alpha radiation is composed of two protons and two neutrons emitted from an unstable atom, extremely dense in mass, doesn't travel far, extremely mutagenic, but you can actually hold plutonium, which is an alpha emitter, in the palm of your hand, and the alpha radiation doesn't penetrate the dead cells of the epidermis to mutate living cells in the dermis, but if it gets into your body, it's highly carcinogenic. The other one is beta radiation, which is an electron emitted from an unstable nucleus, and they all do the same thing. They mutate genes in the cells. So let's show how radiation causes cancer. The body's made of trillions of cells, and these are somatic cells, and the cells are 46 chromosomes, and on the chromosomes are the genes. And there's a pair of genes in every cell that controls the rate of cell division called regulatory gene. This is just a simple sort of way of describing, but it's more complex than this. And if an alpha particle hits a gene, I got it. It's hard to get it. I got that one too. So the gene gets the cell might die, but if it doesn't die, the DNA molecule is changed biochemically and structurally. And that cell will sit any time from 5 to 60 years. You have no idea you've been mutated. No idea you've been exposed to radiation, because if you eat fish caught in the Connecticut River downstream, the fish may contain radioactive elements. You shouldn't be eating fish from this river downstream. You shouldn't be drinking any water from this river downstream, and I'll go into that in a minute. Or if you're near the reactor and you breathe, you're going to be breathing in tritium or whatever, and you won't know, because one day you might notice a lump in your breast or you might cough up some blood. And what's happened is that cells sit quietly, and that's called the latent period of carcinogenesis, the time it takes for cancer to develop. Whereas if I cough on you, in 2 days you're coughing. And for measles, mumps, whooping cough, chickenpox, 3 weeks incubation period. But cancer is long, cryptogenic and insidious and silent. And this is the absolute reason why the nuclear industry gets away with what they do. And no cancer wears an identifying flag saying, I was made by some strontium 90 you ate in a Hershey's milk kiss 20 years ago. Why Hershey's? Because there was a major accident, one third of the fuel melted, the radiation monitors went totally off scale, the milk of the cows that were feeding on silage, because it was this time of the year, was full of radioactive iodine. Radioactive iodine, I-131, has a half-life of 8 days, so it lasts for 6 weeks. So what did they do? They powdered the milk, and they waited till the I-131 decayed and made chocolate out of the milk. Except lots of other isotopes got out, strontium-90 that lasts for 600 years, cesium that lasts for 600 years, plutonium almost certainly got out, lasts for 500,000 years. I have been saying since the accident and at a huge town meeting in Harrisburg in front of Jim Lehrer, don't eat Hershey's chocolates. The town councilwoman came up really angry and she said, did you say that on purpose? And I said, yes, because I'm a doctor. They haven't sued me. If they do sue me, that's great, because I'll go to court. And we've got the documents from the Hershey's lab in this book denoting the radiation in the milk. It's pretty high. I wonder what the radiation is in the milk down there near the reactor in those cows. And they release a lot of stuff all the time, some more than others. They're called routine releases. I'll get into that in a minute. All the time. So one day, instead of the cell dividing by mitosis, it goes crazy and produces trillions and trillions of cells, and that's cancer. Unregulated cell growth, which we usually cannot stop. And, you know, when we treat patients with cancer, we to kill the cancer, we nearly kill the patient. We sometimes do. Sometimes people do survive. We can cure some childhood cancers now. And cancer cells invade, say, a capillary, and they'll go up to the liver and grow into secondary cancers in the liver and the brain and the like. And so really cancer is a parasite, and the patient just withers away and dies, and then the cancer dies. And it's, you've all known someone who's had cancer, probably some of you here have. I've had a melanoma. But to help a person die of cancer, or my father, what's a human life worth? What's a human life worth? And we know that because in medicine we're on the coalface. We deal with this all the time, how precious every life is. Now, there are other cells in the body more important than somatic cells, and they are the eggs and sperm, and they contain only half the number of genes, and when they unite, you have a diploid number normal. Now, every gene in the sperm and egg is precious, and we all carry several hundred genes for disease. My specialty, cystic fibrosis, 1 in 25 Caucasians carry that gene. So in this room, there would be quite a few carriers, and you don't know you carry it till you mate with someone with the same gene because it's recessive. So I'll give you a simple example. Blue eyes are recessive, and you have to have two genes for each characteristic. So you can only have blue eyes if you have two blue-eyed genes. If you have a brown-eyed gene and a blue-eyed gene, you're going to have brown eyes, or two brown-eyed genes, you've got brown eyes. So here's a test, and the one who gets the right answer gets a prize. Two people had blue eyes, and they had a brown-eyed baby. Where did the brown-eyed gene come from? What? The mailman. The mailman, yeah. You get the prize. Who said that? I'll give you a kiss at the end. Now, we carry these genes for disease, and there are now 16,000 genetic diseases described. It's an awful lot. We don't know we carry them unless we mate with someone or unless it's a dominant gene. I once saw at Children's Hospital at Boston one achondroplastic dwarf who was the father and the mother who was normal, followed by six children, and five were achondroplastic dwarfs because that's a dominant gene. So half the number of conceptions, and it's just a toss of the coin each time. Now, as we increase the background, well, we have these abnormal genes, aberrant genes, because of background radiation, which in fact produced mutations to cause fish to develop lungs, birds to develop wings, and eventually this beautiful species of Homo sapiens evolved. We're a very short-lived species. We've only been around for 3 million years or less. I think we're an evolutionary aberrant. I think that our brains are far too big for ourselves. We've got an opposing thumb. We stand on our hind limbs. And we have wrecked the most dreadful damage upon the planet. And we're right at the edge and brink, a tipping point of destroying it with global warming or nuclear war. Okay. So almost all mutations that occur are deleterious. They produce disease. Very few occur that are advantageous so that a species can survive well in the environment. So if you produce lots of mutations fast by increasing background radiation, then you're going to get lots more genetic diseases. We doctors are the biggest irradiators of the public now, aren't we? With fluoroscopies and CAT scans. CAT scans give you a hell of a dose. Each dose you receive adds to your risk of getting cancer. Be judicious. Mammograms, you get a lower dose now than we used to with the old machines, but I don't like putting my breasts under that thing. Little girls in Hiroshima who had no breast tissue at all grew up to have a much higher than normal incidence of breast cancer. The breast is a very radiosensitive organ. You can, I think, identify a lot of cancers now with MRIs. Go into it and check, but they're becoming more sophisticated. Okay, so that's how radiation causes cancer. Now, what happens? I do want to go through enrichment of uranium. When you dig up uranium, there are two isotopes, 235, and that's the one that the Hiroshima bomb was made of, and 238, and this is really radioactive waste. This is present in 0.3%, and it must be in, 0.7%. It must be enriched to 3% for use in nuclear power, and over 50% you've got bomb-grade material. So, as I said, nuclear bombs can be made either from uranium or plutonium. They're the only two elements that fission and can make bombs and be used for nuclear power. This stuff is called depleted uranium. It's depleted not of radiation, but of the uranium only, 0.7% of 235. It's present lying around in gaseous form. The Pentagon realized it was free. It's 1.7 times more dense than lead. And as momentum equals mass by velocity, if you make anti-tank shells out of this stuff, they're tremendously effective. Furthermore, U-238 is pyrophoric, so when it hits a tank, 10 pounds solid mass of DU, 80% burns into tiny aerosolized particles less than 5 microns that can be inhaled into the terminal air passages of the lung, there to induce cancer. Now, in 1991, George I used 360 tons of uranium near a town called Basra. And my colleagues noticed, pediatricians, an increased incidence of childhood cancer 4 years later. What you need to know is children are incredibly sensitive to radiation. Rapidly dividing cells as such are very sensitive. And that's why we use radiation to try and cure cancer, because the cells are rapidly dividing, so we try and focus only on the cancer to kill the cells with very high doses of radiation. You can see a baby growing before your very eyes. I know when I was breastfeeding my babies, as their feet extended from the first when I started, they were here, and then their feet extended beyond my body and they were growing. So babies and children are 10 to 20 times more radiosensitive than adults. One X-ray to the pregnant abdomen doubles the incidence of leukemia, and that work was done by a wonderful physician called Alice Stewart in England. Old people are also very sensitive to radiation, get cancers more readily. Immunodepressed patients are too. And so the nuclear industry uses a classic 70-kilogram normal healthy male to work out how much radiation people can receive. But the population is totally heterogeneous. And so that's totally inappropriate to do that. We saw children just next to that reactor just now, and there's the primary school. Knowing that those children are 10 to 20 times more radiosensitive, it's absolutely criminal to have put a school next to that reactor, and that school should be closed down. That's medically indicated. Closed down. I don't care if they've changed the way they measure the radiation. I'm not interested in that. I'm going to tell you what that reactor emits all the time. What I didn't say was that the incidence of childhood malignancy in Basra has increased 700%. And because of the sanctions and the war, our colleagues have no drugs to treat the patients, and they do literally stand at the end of the bed weeping. Quite a lot of paediatricians have actually been killed in the war, some I think on purpose and some accidentally. So there are and many doctors have fled Iraq. I probably would have if I'd been a doctor there. The other thing that we notice is that there's a very large incidence of severe congenital anomalies, babies born with no brains, anencephaly, a little nubbin of midbrain on the base of their skull so they can breathe, cough, suck and cry, and they die in about a week after delivered such an infant, babies born with no arms or legs, and severe midface deformities with cyclops eyes in the centre of their forehead. And the incidence of those malformations has risen 700% too. Women are too terrified to give birth to their babies. The other day in one of my audiences was a female obstetrician from Afghanistan. They're seeing the same things there because America's using DU in Afghanistan. This is a war crime beyond belief. And they're using this in the cradle of civilization, where arithmetic and writing and law began. And you are all guilty, as am I. Like the good Germans, well, we saw the cattle trucks, we didn't know what was in them. Yeah, we saw the smoke coming out the chimneys, we didn't know what it was. We are totally responsible under the Nuremberg principles. Every person is morally responsible for what their government does. That's us. And I'm just as responsible as you. Now, since they went in the second time with George II, they've used over 1,000 tonnes of DU, mostly in Baghdad, where 5 million people, half of whom are children. I wrote a piece for the New York Times, I think it was pretty good, some years ago about DU and the medical implications. They said, we are unable to publish this, passive tense. Who told them they couldn't? There's a huge cover-up by this Pentagon. And you know, I like Obama, but you know, he's increased the military budget over George Bush. Why does he want to go into Afghanistan, one of the poorest countries on earth? No one's ever won in Afghanistan, using drones, pilotless planes that shoot down missiles on people and houses, and the person who presses the button is some sort of apparatchik in Florida sitting for a screen. Apparently it's affecting those individuals a lot because not only do they see the target, but they see the after effects of the body parts. And pilots don't see that. They just drop the bombs and move on. So they're needing counselling. Okay, so that's depleted uranium. So let's go to enrichment of uranium. The uranium is converted to a gas, uranium hexafluoride, a potently corrosive gas and also potent global warmer. And it is passed through nickel plates with micropores. On one side stays 238 because it's bigger. The other side collects 235 and it's enriched. This nickel is quite valuable, and the nuclear industry have certified it's below regulatory concern. It's very radioactive gamma radiation. And so they are recycling it into jewellery, belt buckles, children's teeth braces, hip replacements, knives and forks and furniture. It's in my book. The reference is in the book. Just everything the nuclear industry says, almost everything, is a lie. Okay, they use two 1,500 megawatt coal-fired plants to generate the electricity to enrich the uranium. But don't forget, nuclear power's emission-free. They also emit CFC gas, which is banned under the Montreal Protocol because it damages the ozone. 93% of the CFC-114 gas is emitted from the enrichment plant at Paducah because there are hundreds of miles of pipes containing this uranium hexafluoride, which is very hot. Alongside are pipes with CFC to refrigerate the gas, and they're very old and they leak like mad. CFC gas, as well as destroying ozone, is 10 to 100,000 times more potent as a global warmer than CO2. And that's what is in the AP article today, because as I talked to the state legislature yesterday, to the Committee on Natural Resources and Energy, this AP reporter was there. And they rang the man at the enrichment plant at Paducah, and he said, well, we're getting better, and it's not as bad as it was. And anyway, it's that's right. They were going to move to Ohio for
years. It will be almost emission-free.
That's right. No, they'll use centrifuges like they... But they're taking forever to do it. Okay, so that's enrichment. At the moment, so much CO2 is used in producing the uranium that a nuclear power plant produces 30% of the CO2 as a similar-sized gas-fired plant, but there's only 10 or 20 years' supply of good, high-grade uranium in the world. And within that time, 10 or 20 years, a nuclear power plant will produce the same amount of CO2 as a gas-fired plant, so you may as well just burn the fossil fuel. The lies just take my breath away and make me so mad. I rang the man who runs NPR in Washington, the boss, and I told him, you mustn't run these ads. But he still does. They're not called ads, you know, they're called underwritten by... What's the firm that sponsors McNeil Lira, that awful ADM, is it? Supplying Archer Midland, and the boss is in jail, and they do all the genetically modified food. Okay, so the reactor. I'm doing 1,000 megawatt. Yours is a bit smaller. They pack 100 tons of uranium rods encased in zircon, which actually catches fire if the rods get too hot. This is immersed in water. They pull the control rods out of boron. The whole thing reaches critical mass. Atoms start breaking apart in a random fashion, producing 200 new radioactive elements that didn't exist before man fissioned uranium. This is the energy released is E equals mc squared, the sort of energy released inside the sun. Enormous, and this becomes 1 billion times more radioactive. And it contains as much long-lived radiation as that released by 1,000 Hiroshima-sized bombs. So you're living next to a bomb plant, only 1,000 Hiroshima bombs. It's a bit less because your plant's a bit smaller. Did you know that? I suppose you did. I know 650. But you're living next to a bomb factory. They were designed to be bomb factories. Now, the heat emitted boils the water. The water's taken off, turns a generator, which generates electricity, this electricity.
So we can waste it.
Yes. Wait a minute. Don't interrupt. All a nuclear power plant is designed to do, therefore, is to boil water. There are other ways to boil water. This is the most dangerous way to boil water that man could ever devise. It uses up to 1 million gallons of water a minute to keep it cool from the Kinetic River, which goes back relatively radioactive, containing carbon-14, whose half-life is 114,000 years. Carbon is present in every cell of our body, and tritium is routinely released. The only thing that stops tritium escaping is gold, as nuclear power plants are not made of gold, and they make a hell of a lot of tritium. It goes out into the Connecticut River. This one's half-life is 12.4 years. Multiply the half-life by 20 to get its total radiological life. And these elements bioconcentrate in the food by orders of magnitude in the algae, the crustaceans, the little fish and the big fish, called bioconcentration. So therefore, and you can't smell, taste or see any of these isotopes. Or also through that stack, there's a high stack, tritium is routinely released. It combines with oxygen to form tritiated water. There's a huge literature in the Journal of Health Physics on tritium. They're scared stiff of the stuff. It's a soft beta, doesn't emit any gamma, and all the energy is transmitted to the tissues. It doesn't get out because it's very soft. And this tritiated water is absorbed through the skin. The skin lets nothing through, the most important organ of our body. But tritium enters the skin very readily. So if you're immersed in a fog because it's an inversion system near the plant, you're going to be absorbing tritium. The trees absorb tritium, and at night the dew drips down with tritium in them. in the dew. Tritium combines with the DNA molecule, gets into every cell. It causes brain tumours, abnormalities of fetuses, and all sorts of cancers all over the body. Other elements escape too, called argon, krypton, and xenon. They're noble gases. They don't combine in the body except they're fat soluble, and they tend to go to the fatty deposits here in the abdomen and upper thighs where the testicles and ovaries are located. They're very, very high energy gamma emitters and can, as such, mutate genes in the eggs and sperm. If the wind's blowing this way and there's an inversion system, you're being exposed to. These are called routine emissions. It's all fine by the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, which is paid for by the nuclear industry. You don't have an independent body to monitor your health or to monitor these people at this reactor. This is a major health problem. There's just been a study in Germany done by Dr. Eisenberg who has found that there's a much higher than normal incidence of cancer around the older reactors. Why? Because it takes a long time to get the cancer. You have to take that whole exposed population, follow them till they die and do autopsies on all of them to get the correct diagnosis, because often we're lazy when we write death certificates, and compare them to a non-exposed population. Pilgrim's been studied in Massachusetts. They have a higher incidence of cancer, and we're going to see more and more. Now, if there's a meltdown, how would we have a meltdown? Well, it's easy. I could produce a meltdown easily. Reactors are dependent upon external electricity supply to supply the pumps for the cooling water. If that's cut off during a storm or whatever, and they lose the coolant, within 2 hours it melts down. In Sweden last year, they got to with several minutes of a Chernobyl-style meltdown because they lost their external supply. They all have emergency generators to start up. They couldn't get two of the generators. They're sort of old and they don't practice them very often. They couldn't get two of them started, and just at the last moment, they got one started. They closed down 5 of the 10 reactors in Sweden, yet they want to build more because, don't you know, this is the answer to global warming. I could train to be an operator and I could go into the operating room and I might be a bit psychotic, and there are a lot of psychotic people around because Reagan emptied out the mental hospitals and they sleep in the streets and stuff and they're not cared for or medicated, and I could flip the wrong switch and you'd have a meltdown. As reactors get old, and this is one of the oldest in the country, the pipes become embrittled, like human beings' pipes. So there's a thing called a bathtub curve, and it applies to human beings and nuclear reactors. In the first few years of life, children are vulnerable to diseases and infections and meningitis and the like, even though we immunise them. During early adulthood and midlife, you're pretty stable most of the time. And when you get older, your pipes start clagging up, like my pipes are clagging up. And when you get old, you know, all sorts of things start happening, and you look at your body and think, oh my God, I look like the old patients I used to treat. Well, it's the same with reactors. Chernobyl, in the first few months, they're very vulnerable to accidents as things sort of settle down. Chernobyl and Three Mile Island both occurred in the first few months of life, and now your reactor's here. Its pipes are cracking and falling apart. I'll show you this in a minute. And they want to extend its life, as you know, for another 20 years, which is really wicked. And also, they're pumping out the power output. They've got enriched uranium up to 3.5%, because, you see, the cost of a reactor is in the initial building the reactor. And then Entergy takes over and they just sell you electricity at high cost, and they encourage you to use as much as you possibly can so they make more money. And they push up the power output because they'll make more money. But when the power output goes up, the thing starts vibrating. And the pipes themselves are fragile and they'll fall apart. So what they're doing is, in fact, precipitating maybe a meltdown at Vermont Yankee. I'm wondering how you can close it down. I'll tell you what. I mean, you can think of mad things that are benign. But once Patch Adams, the Dr. Clown, and I led a naked march down Van Ness in San Francisco, because it was just getting to Y2K, and, you know, we could have had a nuclear war. In fact, I was in the White House talking to the Pentagon by conference call, and they said, don't worry, we've got it all worked out. In fact, the Pentagon lost their computers, their early warning computers, to start a nuclear war for 8 months over the rollover. We could have had meltdowns at the reactors and the like. And I was at this big conference. Gorbachev was there with Patch. He was in another room, Gorbachev. And, you know, we were really worried, and the press was bored stiff. It's like, why cover this? You know, this is boring until there's a meltdown. And then so Patchcock went to the microphone and said, I've been telling Helen since July we need to take our clothes off and walk across America. And I thought, oh, Patch. So I went to the mic and I said, who'll take their clothes off? And half the audience put their hands up. And one woman said, I'll ring the media. So she rang the media. They were there in a flash. Isn't it interesting what turns them on? So we went out into this sort of beautiful red carpeted foyer, and I thought, oh, well. So I got my gear off. I left my scarf on to cover the naughty bits, and I wore my pearls. Patch just stripped naked, as did 50 other people. And you know what? The human body is beautiful. Fat ones, skinny ones, tall ones, really beautiful. And it's so vulnerable to what I'm talking about, you know, to a nuclear attack or whatever. I didn't know what to do, so I thought, oh, well, we'll go out on the street. So we started walking down Van Ness. It was at night, it was cold. And someone started chanting, nudes, not nukes. Nudes, not nukes. And guys were driving along, and they went, and pulled up and got out and started clapping. They didn't know why we were there. People in the bus are tired going home, and suddenly their eyes fell out. We got down to the corner, and I thought, I don't want to go in a paddy wagon to an American jail stark naked. So we came back, but I've never seen such courageous, excited people. No one put their clothes on. Everyone's standing around little knots talking. I'm on the cell phone talking to ABC News, stark naked. It was very pure. And I mean, it just suddenly flashed into my brain. You know, you could all go down there, the whole of Brattleboro. And don't tell me you wouldn't get the whole of the national press, let alone the international press. You would. Nudes, not nukes. And it's medical. You'll have your doctors there, they can wear white coats, you know, and have a stethoscope. But I tell you what, you would focus national attention. The New York Times would be there in a flash, Matthew Wald and Fox News and everyone. You would hit the international headlines, and by God, it might work. Might give the governor a hell of a shock. What? Hands up those who'll do it. I'll come and join you. No, you didn't all put your hands up. That's not fair. Yeah, it's cold in January, isn't it? No, yeah, no. Don't wait till January. Do it before it on a nice, warm fall day. Indian summer, do it then. You've got to do it soon. Soon. Randy, you'll do it, won't you? Yeah, right. Okay, now, what else do I have to say? As the neutrons irradiate the core and the metal, the iron and the nickel and everything, they become radioactive, very potently radioactive, dangerous. Radioactive iron, radioactive nickel, what's the other one? Radioactive cobalt, 60. And they give out huge amounts of radiation, and they're dangerous for the poor workers going in there. You know, they often use workers in very high radiation areas, and they're called sponges, these poor kids. And they have a badge, and they can spend like 3 seconds before they get their yearly dose of radiation. And these kids tend to go to other reactors because they get paid a fair bit, you know. And this is very radioactive, and it's called CRUD. I love that. And CRUD stands for Chalk River Unidentified Deposits. Well, they clean the pipes out from the CRUD. We can't clean my CRUD out, but they can clean this CRUD out. And they take it along maybe to Savannah River, and they sometimes flush it into the Connecticut River. They also discharge often unreported amounts of radiation both into the air and water quite frequently. This is not an uncommon occurrence. Decommissioning is going to cost probably up to $5 billion to produce. You have to let the thing cool down for decades because it's so radioactive. And then it gets cut apart by remote control using robots. More fossil fuel, more CO2. A nuclear power plant now, according to Standard & Poor's, will cost $12 to $15 billion to build. Who's going to pay for it? Yeah, you suckers. This is a socialised industry, like the Pentagon is really a communist organisation because you pay for it. Whereas your medical care, that's a capitalist system, isn't it? The whole thing's crazy. In Australia, we've got free medical care. Go to the doctor, get your diagnosis, get your medicines. I get a lot of tablets. I pay about $5 a month because it's all subsidised. And then you go next door and the government puts the money in the palm of your hand. That's why you pay taxes, to be cared for. Are you funny, you American? They're going... Whereas in Australia, they'd be going, God almighty, you know, and they'd get mad and march out and start doing something, especially the unions. What?
And start farming in the Murray-Darling.
Well, there's no water in the Murray-Darling now. We've got a drought and everything's drying up and the farmers are having to leave their farms. It's desperate from global warming. Desperate. Meltdown. I'm going to read you a passage from the book. I don't want to scare you, but I mean, I think you need to hear the truth. Do you mind? And everyone has to get a copy of this book. Can you hand me my glasses, please, Jill? You're not allowed to leave the building unless you have a copy of the book, because I'm going to lock the door. Okay. Now, this meltdown, the scenario was described by the Union of Concerned Scientists, and it's actually Indian Point, 35 miles from Manhattan. I was outside Indian Point the other day in Bobby Kennedy's boat. And if I'd been a Timothy McVeigh psychotic and a little boat loaded with fertiliser, I could have driven it into the cooling pipes, two of which transmit 2 million gallons a minute into the reactors. And so this is the scene if there was a meltdown at Indian Point. Oh, I say, while Indian Point nuclear power plants operate at full tilt in a country that insists on car seats and safety belts, no smoking, no swimming without a lifeguard, fire extinguishers, oxygen masks, life vests and airbags, citizens lack the most basic information about how to protect themselves and their children in the event of a nuclear meltdown. Nor is there any official requirement to supply this information to the general population. Imagine this scene, over 300,000 people, and of course you don't have that here, but extrapolate down, are running and driving away from the stricken reactor. You can't evacuate. By the time you know it's happened, the clouds already contaminated you. Evacuation plans, they're just a red herring.
It's a good joke, though. It's a good joke.
It's not a joke. Be a good boy. Stuck at traffic lights and traffic jams. All are in a state of panic, anxiety and acute disarray. Trying to reach their children at schools, their spouses and their mates, desperate. Then they begin to taste a strange metallic flavour in their mouths, which they tasted at Chernobyl and Three Mile Island. They infer that each breath exposes them to deadly radioactive gases. The radio blasts out dire warnings. Nobody knows what they're doing and nobody's in control. What about Manhattan? Millions of people trapped as the bridges in the Midtown Lincoln and Holland tunnels are totally blocked, hiding in their apartments, hardly daring to breathe. If everyone took inert potassium iodide tablets, which should be in every medicine cabinet in Massachusetts, Connecticut, New Hampshire, and Vermont, as soon as they heard about the meltdown, peak doses to the thyroids of radioactive iodine could be reduced by 30%, but of course none of the other isotopes would be affected. It should therefore be mandatory that every person living within 50 miles of Indian Point stock potassium iodide. Yet the NRC requires that potassium iodide tablets be available only for a 10-mile radius. stipulating that recommended consideration of potassium iodide distribution out to 10 miles was adequate for the protection of the public health and safety. Compared to adults, children receive three times the thyroid dose because their little thyroids really suck this stuff in from I131 because they have a higher respiratory rate and their thyroid is relatively small. And then many would die of acute radiation illness. Hands up those who've read On the Beach by Neville Shute. Yes, it's about a nuclear war that occurs by accident in the Northern Hemisphere, which could happen today because the weapons, nothing's changed since the Cold War. The weapons are on hair trigger alert, ready to go, and that'll be the end of life on Earth. Everyone died except people in Melbourne, which is where I lived, and I was 15. Gradually, the radiation came down, and people started getting severe nausea, bloody diarrhea, their hair was falling out, vomiting, and the government dispensed cyanide capsules so that people could kill their babies immediately and they didn't have to die in such distress. And at the end of the book, everyone's dead in Melbourne and that's the end of the human race. The beautiful, elegant streets are still there, the trams are there, bits of paper blowing down in the breeze, a blind gently flapping. And that marked my soul, and I was 15. That's why I do this work as a doctor. So many hundreds of thousands would die of acute radiation illness within 2 weeks. And then many hundreds and thousands more would get cancer, up to 500,000 or 750,000 people in Manhattan. So that's a meltdown. Now I want to show you a couple of slides. I'm not going to go into reprocessing a Generation 4 reactor. Suffice it to say, Generation 4 reactors are fueled with 5 to 15 tonnes of plutonium. So we lose the coolant, there's a meltdown, but not just that, there'll be a massive nuclear explosion that could be seen from Mars with 15 tonnes of plutonium and that material scattered to the four winds. The most satanic thing I've ever read about in medicine. But the physicists are very excited about it because they don't know any medicine. There's a huge literature on radiation and cancer. Huge. And just to end, doctors really know about this because at Three Mile Island, the doctors fled with their families and left their patients in the hospitals to care for themselves. So you've got one task ahead of you. I don't feel like coming back unless you've done it. I'm going to watch.
Please join me in thanking Dr. Kelly.
You're listening to If You Love This Planet. The lecture you've heard today is Dr. Helen Caldicott in Brattleboro, Vermont, delivered in April 2009. Thanks for joining us today. We'll be back next week when Dr. Helen Caldicott will interview another fascinating guest. Don't forget, if you'd like to support the program, which would be greatly appreciated, go to the website ifyoulovethisplanet.org and there's a place there where you can donate. And also look through past programs and lots of interesting articles. So thanks again for joining us and we'll be back next week.
You've been listening to If You Love This Planet with Dr. Helen Caldicott. This program is broadcast on community radio across the United States, including our host station, KPFT Pacifica, Houston, Texas. This program is produced and engineered by Jazz Williams, co-produced by Scott Powell, and our publicity and outreach are coordinated by Amanda Bellerby. To listen to previous shows or to make a donation, go to our website, ifyoulovethisplanet.org.